It's the QUTV Hawk Talk Podcast, the revamped QUTV Hawk Talk Podcast. Shane Hosley, Hunter Knox with you, however you are, wherever you are, and whoever you are, we thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening in. A lot to get to on today's show. We got men's and women's hoops, lacrosse, baseball, softball, and we give you our top five storylines as MLB spring training gets underway. Hunter, a lot to get to, so let's get right to it. Let's start with the men's basketball team, the QU men's basketball team, senior day on Saturday. You were on the call for that one. Boy, what a fun, exciting game that was.
Yeah, it was my first time doing men's and women's play-by-play, and certainly a great experience for the first time calling a game winner from Viktor Kovačević that we'll get to here in a second. But to watch the number one team in the nation in women's basketball, Drury, put on an absolute clinic. It was a tough day to be a Hawks fan, especially for women's basketball, but they came right back in the men's game. Senior day came out and won. Viktor Kovačević, ice in his veins. We'll talk about it right now, probably. We got a new podcast system going on here, the ability to run a phone through here, and we're going to test that out real quick. But it was really cool to be in the arena, make that call. I know you've been a part of one yourself, so we both kind of have that in common now. We got to see Viktor Kovačević show off his clutch basketball skills. I don't know. We need to find him a nickname or something.
Mr. Clutch, I guess what we could call him now. He's hit a couple game winners.
Yeah, I mean, you
from almost the same spot on both of them.
Exactly. He just finds a way to get it done. There's no doubt in my mind every time he goes into the clutch on what he's going to do and how effective he is at doing it. It's kind of just one of those things you see it happening. You get those great players where you just know that they're going to at least give you a chance, a very close chance at the end of the game.
And we'll get you that call here in a second. Hunter Knox was on the call for that one. What an exciting game. Viktor Kovačević, as you heard it or saw it on the GLVC Sports Network, here's how it sounded.
The ball gets into Briscoe. Over to Kovačević. Sets the screen. Kovačević going in. Gets it up. Gets it in. 2 seconds left. 2 seconds left. Garrison looking to get it into Johnson. Johnson pushing the length of the floor. Gets up a good look. And it's off. Kovačević with the game winner. Unbelievable job. Ice in his veins. Again, Kovačević with the game winner.
How exciting is that?
Yeah, it was the tension in the room was palpable. You could see it. Quincy was down big in that game for going into the 6:45 mark, I believe it was. They were down 12 and they went on a tear there at the end. I think it was 18-5. They outscored Drury to end the game. Just big bucket after big bucket from both Tanner Stuckman, Charles Collier, and Viktor Kovačević, obviously at the end, coming up two free throws before that possession, knocked those down, and a missed three by Drury led to this play that we just played off of our phone here. And yeah, it was one of those things that's very special to be in the building for sure.
Exciting moment nonetheless, no doubt. And a big part that might get overlooked, you see the shot, you see the game winner, but down the stretch, QU on the defensive end, finding a way to come up with stop after stop after stop. I think, if my memory serves correct, they held Drury to 3 points over the last, 4 or 5 minutes?
Yeah, absolutely.
The biggest part of any comeback, I think, that gets overlooked the most is on the defensive end. Yeah, you got to score on the other end to cut the deficit, but you also got to get stops on the defensive end. And the Hawks, they were down 12 in the second half. They're up three at halftime, and then Drury went on an absolute tear in the first half of the first part of the second half and jumped out to a double-digit lead. You thought, oh, here we go again. It was almost the same story as except Lindenwood game. They got down early and had to come back, but Lindenwood just put that game away late with free throws. But this game, you felt like was starting to slip away. You thought on senior night, there's no way they can go down like this.
Yeah, no. Conley Garrison came out in the second half. He was one of Drury's best players. Their leading scorer had, I believe it was 5 points in the first half, and he was pretty quiet. Ryan Briscoe did a great job on him, but Conley Garrison came back out guns a-blazing, went on his own little run. And then towards the end, like we talked about, the defense was unbelievable. Ryan Briscoe didn't stand out in the box score a whole bunch, but his defense on Garrison down the stretch, especially. He barely even allowed Garrison to touch the ball. One of those guys who can find a bucket from anywhere, and Ryan Briscoe did a fantastic job of just keeping him out of the paint, away from running him off of screens. They were setting time and time again off-ball screens. It was a very physical game, but Ryan Briscoe is one of the stronger guards in the GLVC, and he did a great job down the stretch. And like we talked about, defense is usually what leads you to being into those positions and doesn't get talked about enough. They notice the big shot. But Kovacevic, down the stretch, played great defense too. He blocked a shot, and he got, I believe it was 3 or 4 rebounds down the stretch that sort of gave people life. When you're not able to get offensive rebounds off of those missed shots that you normally are able to do, like Drury was able to rebound pretty well, but down the stretch they had two of their big men get into big foul trouble and foul out. And that was a big moment when I believe it was Edmonds fouled out on a closeout on Tanner Stuckman. It allowed Quincy to take advantage of their size inside with Kovacevic being on the floor and only one big man for the part of Drury in the form of Okafor, not able to, get rebounds effectively. He can't do it all by himself down low, and that was kind of the deciding factor, I think, when it came to the rebound battle, especially defensively. They weren't well matched up size-wise. Kovacevic did a great job perimeter-wise. Not normally the best perimeter defender, did a good job at the end.
Yeah, he's kind of that stretch four. He can kind of guard out there, but he's more playing down the block with Stuckman. And Stuckman on offense plays primarily around the perimeter, but he's 6'9", so he's got to usually guard one of the bigger players on the opposing team, along with Aziz Fadika. That's one of the things that's really stood out with this Hawks team that they haven't really had really since Joseph Taggarelli, was that presence on the inside with Fadika, Stuckman, and Kovacevic, all at least 6'8". They matched up well size-wise with just about anybody they played.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the big difference is being able to have Aziz Fadika on the floor much more in this game. We talk about it all the time in broadcasts. Is his strength is almost a hindrance with his ability to move people around. Sometimes he gets into foul trouble just by being stronger than the person he's guarding or defending him. But he did a great job this game of making sure he was on the floor when he needed to be. And Kovacevic showed out defensively. One of the areas that I would say could probably use a little bit of improvement, he showed some improvement from the beginning of the season to right now in the Drury game. But Tanner Stuckman, one of those guys that's going to Kovacevic, Moore, going to come out next season with fresh legs and I would assume a bit more determined attitude coming off of a season where they weren't really picked to do anything too crazy, but coming off a season where they didn't do that well, I think it was important for them to, I mean, they're 500 right now, and I'm not sure many people would have guessed them being where they're at.
I would totally agree with that, and they could just as easily be 4 or 5 games over 500. They've let some games slip away. They've lost some close games. That game against Rockhurst, they easily could have won. The Lindenwood game was a winnable game. They could easily be, instead of 13-13, they could easily be 15-11, 16-10 right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in prime position to make the GLVC tournament. Two games left, they're eliminated, but still a lot to play for. To play for a winning record after winning just 9 games last year. 10 games under 500 to 500 is a huge improvement.
Yeah, I talked to Coach Hellenthal a couple days ago, and he talked about the improvement of a lot of the guys and people having to step off with a lot of the people that they expected to play well or even play at all weren't able to. They had players go down. One of them went down with a heart condition, and another one of them was hurt. I believe his leg was messed up or something from the beginning of the season. Some of the prospects and people that Hellenthal wanted to make an impact didn't get a chance to. Austin Downing got hurt, arguably the biggest player on the perimeter for the Hawks, got hurt, and people had to step up. Briscoe took a hold of the point guard spot like he's been accustomed to. He's been here for, 4 years now? And he's one of those guys that's just strong, steady, any given point and able to take advantage of that. And Justin Warren, a freshman from Whitney Young, has impressed everyone, including Coach Hellenthal. He didn't really know he was going to be able to get out of him, but coming from Whitney Young, he's been a part of some big games and some played against some good players, and you could see it whenever he comes on the floor. He's just stone cold, doesn't really give into emotion very much. I think they're in for, I'd say, a good next couple of years.
that things are looking up for this program. You got Stuckman coming back, Briscoe coming back for his senior season. They're going to lose a lot of seniors next year. Stuckman, Briscoe, Downing. Hopefully he can stay healthy next year and go out. I feel for that kid. Missing his a whole entire season last year. Thought he was feeling. I talked to him before the season. He was feeling as strong as he ever has, as healthy as he's ever been. And to go down in the middle of the season like he did, and not be able to play another full season, your heart feels for him.
Yeah, it's one of those things. That's sports, and it hurts every single time you see someone like that go down because you know how hard they work, how long they've been in the gym. He had a shoulder injury last season that kept him out, and it took him a while to get his shot back to where he wanted it to be because of how much it messed with him and the rehab and things like that. And for him to grind back and just to get hurt right away again, it's those things that knock you down that hopefully, in his case, makes him even stronger next year, and he goes out with a big bang and goes out on top, which I think next year the Hawks can come out and potentially be a contender to make the GWC tournament at least, if not be in the top five in the conference, just based off of the skills that they've shown this year. They've shown a lot of bright spots. They just need to be able to finish some more games, and that's all it's come down to.
It's essentially just putting it all together, finishing games, winning games you need to win. They had a couple of big upset victories, a couple of close victories, but they also let some games slip away. You're looking at possibly a 15-11 team on their way to Edwardsville for the GLVC tournament next week.
Yeah, and I know they wanted to try and reach that after the down year that they had, but if you really look at it, this is not an absolute failure of a season. They improved win-wise. They were shorthanded most of the time. I mean, they go into this next game, and they've had basically a rotation of like 8 players, 9 players max, and that hasn't allowed for people to get many minutes of rest, and they've had a lot of people running up and down the court. Azeez Fadika, Stuckman, Briscoe rarely ever takes a break, and you can see it kind of wearing down on them towards the end. But that was the thing about the Drury game, which was so impressive, is that they're on their last leg against a team that's, what are they now, 18-8? They were right. They had rattled off 7 straight wins.
They were on fire.
Yeah, they just basically destroyed Truman State, a fantastic team, by almost 20 points, and coming to this game very high off of that kind of performance. And it's very easy to just see that team and be like, yeah, we're going to get beat here. But they didn't fold at all. They weren't worried about that. They've been in big games. They've played good teams, and they beat good teams. And you can see it. Hellenthal is getting everything he can out of these guys. They're laying it all out on the floor for their teammates and for the team itself.
And they've got 2 more games to do that as of the recording of this podcast. Thursday and Saturday, against on the road against Missouri S&T and Maryville, who they beat earlier this season. Both those teams they beat earlier in this season. So hopefully the Hawks can rattle off a couple of wins to end this season on a high note and finish with a winning record. We'll shift gears. We'll take about a 60-second break. We'll come back and we'll talk some lacrosse and some baseball. We'll hit the diamond for Hawks baseball and Hawks softball, and we'll talk women's lacrosse, who just recently won their first game as a program. So we'll be right back in about 60 seconds. We are back. Thank you for sticking through that break, or if you fast forward through it, that's also fine as well. Thank you for tuning into the QUTV Hawk Talk Podcast, the first episode of 2020. Shane Holsey, Hunter Knox, talking everything QU sports, and we'll give you our five storylines to watch heading into MLB, as MLB spring training gets underway as well, in our top five segment later on. We're shifting gears now. We just talked some hoops. Now let's talk some lacrosse. Yes, QU lacrosse, for the first time ever, victorious in their first home game, women's lacrosse, an 18-7 victory over Upper Iowa last Friday. We were there for that game, a really, really special moment and a big milestone in QU sports.
Yeah, it was very interesting getting everyone to see. I mean, for me, that was my first time ever seeing lacrosse live, and I was calling the game, and it was very interesting to try and get some of the lingo, some of the, I guess, flow of the game down. It's very interesting the way it plays. It's a lot like soccer, hockey, basketball in regards to rule play, and it was very cool to see, especially our women's team, who's brand new. This is their first time ever playing at home, especially since the weather hasn't been working with them very much, as they've had to play at Lindenwood against Davenport. And after getting whomped by Davenport the last time they played, 19-4, I believe it was, they came out against an Upper Iowa team in a 10-10 match, which is normally 12-12. Upper Iowa was down players, so they didn't get a chance to like get everyone out there at the same time. But they showed lots of improvement, I believe, from the last game out, and showed that they, I believe, can at least win a couple games, get their feet wet into this kind of stuff. There's a lot of freshmen on this team, a lot of people that have rarely even played lacrosse in their entire lives, and it's going to be interesting to see how they move from here.
Yeah, your first season as a program, it's a learning process. It's a feeling out process of sorts. Kathleen Kim's in her first season as a head coach. She's been an assistant before at a big time program in North Carolina, but this is her first time as a head coach at the college level. A lot of these girls are freshmen. It's gonna take some time for them to get their legs underneath them. But if they can win at least a few games this season, that win last Friday, I think, well, it'll definitely help. It definitely helps you ease into the season. You're playing your first game. It's your first time ever as a program to get that first win right out of the gate. That kind of takes that monkey off your back, and it's like, oh, like you start the season 0-4, 0-5. Oh, we got to win a game. We got to show we can compete with these programs that have been in existence longer than us. But if you can win a game right out of the gates, that has to be an enormous boost to the confidence.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things where you just got to break the ice, get relaxed. And a lot of the freshmen showed great poise throughout the entire game. I mean, for the most part, every single person on the field at any given point, minus save a couple of people for the women Hawks, are freshmen. And so it's very nice to see them getting more and more experience. They've got a couple people injured that should be coming back from injury here in the next week or so. And moving forward, they've got some tough challenges, I believe, when it comes to people that they play. We're pulling up the schedule here right now. They face St. Ambrose in Quincy Stadium. We might be on the call for that. Who knows? But it's one of those things where, like you said, it just gets the monkey off your back, and it shows that they can actually do it. And I think that's going to be really helpful going forward.
Absolutely. They had a tough one up in the UP and Marquette against Northern Michigan. Have you seen that facility? It's an indoor facility. That thing, really? It is something. I saw some pictures of it. That's an incredible facility they got up there. Hawks fell 16-4. Kara Wilhelm had a couple of goals. But Daniel Robinson scored in that game as well. She's got 10 goals in the first three games. They've all come in the last two games.
Yeah, she's unreal. We were talking about it when we were watching the game. She doesn't really seem as though she kind of lulls defenses to sleep time and time again. She just waits and then strides through. She's one of the taller girls, especially in the attacking third, and she can find the back of the net as well as anyone. I haven't seen very much across.
Yeah.
But in what I've seen, she has a knack for finding the goal. Like, you can see it in people in soccer. You can see it in people in basketball. People that know how to score. And she is one of those people. It'll be interesting to see how she develops for the next 3 years. And I'm looking forward to it. It's one of those things where it's very exciting to see how a new sport is played and see how well the people around you, the people you see in the hallway every single day, can go out there and learn how to do something and do it well.
And it's kind of a learning process for everybody as well. People are in this community. This isn't a big lacrosse community at all. That was kind of the idea behind bringing lacrosse to this area, was that this is not a big lacrosse area by any stretch of the imagination. It's something new. It's something exciting. And if they can win a few games here in their first season, I mean, the men have their, they still haven't played an official game yet as of the time we're recording this. The men, they played a doubleheader with the women against St. Ambrose on Wednesday. But it's an exciting time. And speaking of exciting times, QU baseball is always an exciting time. Baseball has always been a staple here at Quincy University. The baseball team so far, 4-2. They've taken 2 out of 3 from St. Leo and 2 out of 3 from Mississippi College. Two very good teams, very, very good teams. Mississippi College, top 25 team in the country. And in that game, that first game on Saturday, that was an exciting one. Extra innings, and the guy who stepped up and got the big hit, freshman Nolan Wassman. I saw this kid play in high school. This kid can hit the holy living you-know-what out of the baseball.
Yeah, he's came in, and not many of us knew who he was. I'm on the baseball team as well, and it's not one of those things where you see a guy, he comes in, he was very quiet to start things out, but he was very in there with Coach Raby all the time, working on his swing, working on what he needed to. And you could see that he was very business. He came in ready to go, do things right. And next thing you know, he's starting at shortstop, not something we really expected. And he came in and in the extra innings of all things, gets his first home run, and it's a grand slam. It's just kind of magical stuff there where it just gets something going, and it ended up giving him the dub.
9-5 victory, so that turned out to be the difference. And he's batting leadoff as a freshman. How much confidence does Raby have in this kid to have him hitting leadoff in his freshman season?
Yeah, no, he's shown great poise. He doesn't get rattled by anything. He doesn't get rattled by the moment. He's played big. We've been practicing for how long in the winter months in our facilities and things like that. Facing live hitting against some of the best arms in the GLVC. You have Riley Martin, you have Sam Stevens, you have people that have just disgusting stuff. So for him to go out there and hit well against them in the winter instills a lot of confidence from Coach Josh Raby in his ability and putting him at leadoff. I was surprised. I thought Joe Rossetti was going to be the leadoff for sure coming into this season, but Wassman, one of those guys kind of like Purcell who can hit for power in the leadoff position. You have Nolan Snyder coming off the bottom of the lineup, a guy who can get on base, who's fast as all get out, and you have someone like Wassman who can hit him around. It allows your lineup to have people that can hit people around at any given point. You go from Wassman all the way down through, you go to Carpenter, you go to Logsdon, you have people that can swing the bat and hit the ball hard and far every single time.
This has to be one of the longest lineups in Division II baseball. This team can hit. The pitching, it's going to be there. But this lineup is something. Josh Raby with the dimensions of this field, how small QU Stadium is. He recruits mashers. You got Wassman, Carpenter, Snyder hit the ball out of the ballpark. Lance Logsdon, maybe not your prototypical power hitter, but he's got some pop as well. Gino D'Alessio can hit the ball out of the yard. Zach Parks, transfer. This team is going to light up some scoreboards.
Yeah, absolutely. You have people that aren't even starting that can hit the ball solid 500 feet. Cole Evans this fall hit a ball off the dead center of the batter's eye in one of our scrimmages, and you can find it on Twitter. Coach Raby posted about it. And these guys are guys that aren't even starting. Like, they have depth everywhere. They have Michael Nielsen coming off the bench. They have Carpenter, who came in as a transfer. You have Wassman doing the same thing. Wassman's 220 at shortstop. Like, that's a massive shortstop.
And he's a freshman. He's 18, 19 years old. He's still going to maybe grow a little bit. He could end up 6'3", 230. Maybe if he's going to play shortstop, I'd imagine you probably wouldn't want him. That there was some talk maybe they move him to third. But I think Coach Raby sent the message, he's our shortstop.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, you have Dayson Cruz at third base, who's as solid as they come defensively. the smooth kid from Aruba who comes in. I mean, we all met Dayson, and he's one of those guys that just is always smiling, always happy to be playing baseball, and he has some unbelievable talents and quick hands at third, fills in beautifully after TJ Tomasio, one of the best defensive third basemen I've ever seen, leaves and comes in and starts immediately. And you have Gino D'Alessio, who can obviously start at third, but beyond that, he can also start behind the plate, which is a great thing to have, especially when you have not necessarily the greatest depth at catcher. Kolesniak is a stalwart behind the plate, but sometimes he just needs a break. But Matt Westfall has shown great improvement in hitting, and if he can show that kind of improvement and consistency behind the plate and at the plate, then he's going to get plenty of time to hit too. You have the outfield is as deep as I've ever seen it. You have Stephen Herring, you have Justin Eads, you have people like that can all start, and you have Zach Parks, and you have Boynton, who is one of those guys who can hit the ball just as far as the rest of them. And it's going to be interesting to see how Coach Raby deals with the weapons.
He doesn't like changing up his lineup that much, but he has so much depth in this lineup. He could play 13, 14 guys every single game and be just fine. But he doesn't like doing that.
Yeah, it's a good problem to have, but not one I think Coach Raby wants to deal with. I think he'd prefer it if he could just have nine guys that are just consistent starters all the time, but I don't even think he can deny the talent that's not starting immediately. And a lot of those guys, with baseball, a lot of times it's just a matter of getting at-bats. Like Justin Eads is one of those guys who I think can get going and hit the ball very well at any given point, and he's a great defensive outfielder. But, I mean, you have someone like Zach Parks ahead of him who can swing the bat just as well as anyone. In the fall, he was, as we quote-unquote call him, our fall American, where he comes in and we don't know much about this guy. This guy from Minnesota has a little bit of an accent, smiling all the time. Yeah,
he is a character.
He is one of the funniest guys on the team. And then when he gets to the plate, it's all business. And he doesn't look like it. He's not the biggest guy in the world, but he is strong as an ox and can put the ball out at any given point.
That's 6'2", 200 pounds. That doesn't jump off the page at you. But he has quick hands, and he is, like you said, strong as all get out. And all business on the field. Off the field, I think we know that's not the case.
Yeah, absolutely. He's so funny. He doesn't take life too seriously, which is something you need sometimes on a baseball team. You need those guys that can take the tension out of the room at any given point. And sometimes baseball gets to your head. It's one of those mental sports where you can't be too high, you can't be too low, and he's one of those guys that allows us to stay right in the middle. Especially when you have people that are all business. And then he has to get out there and cheer them up sometimes if they're too upset about an outing or things like that.
And speaking of outings, one guy that impressed me his last time out on Saturday, was Jay Hamill. Struggled his first time out, but boy, last time out, not going to jump off the page at you. 5 innings, 2 runs, but after giving up 7 earned in 3 2/3 to bounce back the next week and go 5 strong, 4 hits, 8 punch-outs, tells you a lot about this kid.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Jay is one of those guys who comes in, does his job every given time that he gets the chance to. And against St. Leo, he was one batter away from being out of that inning that he gave up a bunch of runs. It was the 4th inning he was out there, and he got in some trouble, and then it all sort of rolled off for him there. And then for him to come back out against Mississippi and settle in and do the things he knows he can. He's got some of the best stuff on the team. He comes across his body. He has that weird delivery where he steps forward and then goes back the other way with his motion, and it throws a lot of people off. And his stuff is just disgusting. So for him to lock back in, it's very comforting, I think, as a staff for us to have a consistent guy like him. And, I mean, when you look at the lineup, you would have thought Dalton Overstreet was going to be a starter, but he's been dealing with a little bit of arm soreness, so they've had him coming out the bullpen. And he's been doing a good job as well, coming off of surgery after surgery, for him to lock it down and finally get to where he was. He hit 95 this weekend in Mississippi College, tops on the team right now, and a good sign for going forward. It's one of those things where the velo on this team is just unbelievable. You have Toucher, Stevens, Hamill, Streeter, Riley,
Widholm.
Riley Martin, Widholm. They can all hit 90-plus at any given point. Cruz Meyer can do the same thing. Wallingford, same thing. Repking isn't going to necessarily hit 90, but his curveball is one of the nastiest 12-6 curveballs I've ever seen. And if he can stay consistent out the pen, we're looking at one of the best pitching staffs in the GOVC, along with one of the best hitting lineups in the GOVC.
Yeah, not ranked in the top 25 coming into this season.
I mean, it was one of those things where as a team, we were kind of put down by it, but it wouldn't be the first time. It happened last year. We weren't ranked as high as we thought we should have been. But it's not until you see the team play that you can really get a grip on it. And so for on paper, you look at teams like Bellarmine is, what, their top 20 right now, and they have one of the best on-paper lineups you can find in Division II. But once things start getting rolling, I think these Hawks are going to show that they're more than deserving of being in the top 25.
As I say, the cream rises to the top.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes it just takes a second for them to realize that's the cream.
All right. Well, we'll find out if that's the cream. Well, when we come back, we'll take another break, and we'll bring you some QU softball as well. QU softball was in action over the weekend. We'll talk about them, and we'll give you our five storylines to watch as spring training gets underway in Major League Baseball. Stick right with us, or you can, if you're listening to this later on, you can fast forward through this break. We're going to take about a minute or so, gather ourselves, and we'll bring you one last segment here on the QU TV Hawk Talk podcast, the revamped QU TV Hawk Talk podcast with Shane Holsey and Hunter Knox. We'll be back shortly. Welcome back. QU TV Hawk Talk podcast, talking everything QU athletics. And we'll be talking some MLB as well here shortly. But one last QU sport to talk about, and that is QU softball. Now, Hunter, we were talking about in our little pre-show preparation earlier, this team lost so much experience. A lot of seniors they lost last year. Alex Devaney, Sarah DeMuth in the circle, Kylie Powers, Morgan Heckman, Jessica Poore, Dana Walsh. I mean, you're losing half your lineup. That's a lot of offense they're losing. They've struggled to score runs here in the early going.
Yeah, absolutely. And you look at the people that they are. Heckman, one of the best hitters in almost all of Division II when it comes to power. Powers, another fantastic hitter. Walsh, consistent. Poore, consistent. Devaney and DeMuth, both consistent in the circle. It was one of those things where it's getting flipped on its head right now. And there's a lot of people coming in that are freshmen that have to fill in those roles. And it's showing right now as they're struggling a little bit to get their bearings. But they just got a dub at the end of the Kentucky Wesleyan series, I believe it was, 4-3, just to get a little bright spot after the weekend where they didn't do necessarily very well. Offensively, we were talking about it earlier, if they don't score, there's nothing their pitchers can do because there's not a lot of points being scored for them. I mean, you look at it, they lost 2-0, 6-0 against Kentucky Wesleyan, but when they score, they win 4-3.
And in that 6-0 game, all those runs came in one inning. It was 0-0 going into the sixth inning.
Yeah, when you're a pitcher and there's rarely times where you can shut out teams. And at a certain point, eventually, they're going to start hitting you, especially in softball. You see someone. Morgan Tansley goes all the way into the sixth inning. This is however many times they've seen her. They're eventually going to start putting the bat on the ball, and it's really frustrating as a pitcher when you don't get any run support to help you out there. And by the time Tansley finally got out of it and Jaylee Jennings came to put a lid on it, the game was basically out of reach.
6-0 going to the seventh inning. That's trouble. That spells trouble.
Yeah, it's especially in an away game, the second of a doubleheader there, it's not exactly the easiest to find the momentum, the motivation to get going into that seventh, especially when you're down so big.
Nice bounce back win on Sunday, though. Putting up, you talk about how the offense is struggling, and then the very next day they go out and score four runs in the first inning. Nothing after that, though. That's a little worrying, but the pitching's good enough. Jaylee Jennings pitched one heck of a game. A win is a win, as they say. Both their wins this year have come by one run.
And Jaylee Jennings has been a part of both of those wins, starting in both of those games. She has done a fantastic job as a freshman coming in and showing consistency and the ability to pitch out of the closing role, the starting role. It's one of those things where you just need to find out who your players are, learn their strengths, learn their weaknesses. They have a lot of freshmen starting at multiple different positions. It's one of those feel-out years, which kind of sucks because you look at some of the older girls, like Mackenzie Collier, she's pitched a ton in these past couple seasons. You don't want to necessarily waste a year for them, but it's going to be important for them to come back the next season since they have, I believe, one senior graduating, Megan Sharpshire, and she's the only one. They'll all be coming back looking to be even better and hopefully continue winning after this win against Bemidji State. It's an interesting name for a college. I have no idea where that's even at.
The Bemidji State Beavers.
Interesting.
That is, how intimidating is that? A beaver, that cute little thing from Minnesota.
Very interesting.
Bemidji State, Minnesota. They'll be playing at the Louisville Slugger Dome up in Peoria on Friday in doubleheader.
That's nice. It's nice for us, I would say, to move there, but maybe not for them to come down from Minnesota. That's still a heck of a drive, no matter where you're at in Minnesota, to come down to Peoria. Been up to Minnesota a few times. It's not the greatest drive through Wisconsin, coming down and through all that farming country.
that's some pretty farming country, though.
It is
true. You get out in like Kansas and Colorado, that's just flat nothing. At least in Wisconsin up there, you got the dairy farms. At least there's something to look at. No offense if you're from Kansas or Colorado.
At a certain point, they know.
Yeah. driving out to Denver from, I'm from St. Louis area, that drive out to Colorado, once you get past Kansas City, there ain't much until you get to Denver.
That's why they call them the flyover states, for sure. But no offense to them, they're a big part of the United States, that's to say the least.
Especially landmass-wise. Mm-hmm. Those are some big, big, boxy states out there in the West. Speaking of out in the West, some teams out West, some teams in the Southeast, spring training underway in Major League Baseball. Some teams in Arizona, 15 teams in Arizona, 15 teams in Florida. This is always an exciting time of the year. You get to mid to late February, pitchers and catchers start reporting, and then you finally get baseball back. We'll give you our top five storylines and our debut of our top five segment here on the QTV Hawk Talk podcast. Shane Holsey and Hunter Knox talking some sports, some QU sports, but now we'll shift our attention to Major League Baseball and give you our top five storylines to watch as MLB spring training gets underway. And the first one, it's been on everybody's minds. It's been all over the headlines. The meme lords have risen and exploited the Astros for all they're worth. And now we've finally reached actual baseball, and Jose Altuve has already been thrown at.
Yeah, the commissioner, Manfred, was making it very clear that he was going to be very, very tight-gripped on the punishments for people that are throwing at the Astros, which I'm sure not everyone is happy with, mm-hmm. given the sort of unwritten rules. If you're in a situation where you know the team is cheated, you know that they've taken away from the greatness that could be for a part of your team, it's one of those things where you get very frustrated and you want to be able to do something about it, and you have the ball in your hand. I'm not necessarily a avid fan of throwing at people. I think it's dangerous a lot of times, but I do know that it is a big part of baseball, like setting a tone against a team that you know has talked very confidently, somewhat boisterously at times, especially if you look at the fact that they were cheating the whole time. Mm. It's one of those things where you lose a lot of respect for a team like that, and that leads to dangerous plays like getting thrown at. But at the same time, it has been a whirl of a past couple months finding out about this cheating scandal.
Has it ever? It's hard to find anything other than Astros baseball news wise, except a few trades that went on. We'll get to a couple of those and some free agent signings that went down. Some big, huge, big time free agent signings. We'll get to a couple of those a little later, but it's going to be an interesting year to see how teams deal with the whole Astros situation. I think Barstool or somebody's already set an over under for number of times Astros get thrown out. Was it like 80 something, 81, 82, something like that?
I might take the over no matter what number it is at this point, seeing as angry. I've never seen a more lively group of MLB players than I have about this subject. Normally, MLB doesn't have, like, one of the main problems with the MLB is that they don't have enough characters, quote unquote, mm-hmm. is what people seem to claim. What with Mike Trout's the best player in the world, and a lot of people think he's too quiet to be the head of baseball. But even he has stepped up and said something about this and said that the Astros didn't get a big enough punishment. When you have people that are normally quiet, reserved guys talking about something like this, you know it's sent a ripple. I've seen time and time again, every day, some people from Trevor Bauer. Trevor Bauer's been probably the spearhead of the argument. He's not a soft-spoken individual whatsoever in what he believes in, especially in this situation. He's been on record saying that he would rather have someone take steroids than know what pitch is coming. When you're taking steroids, you still have to hit the ball to be able to have it go far and effectively take on the cheating. But when you look at knowing what ball is coming, it changes everything. And you looked at their slashes at home versus away. Some people are batting almost 200 points better batting average wise at home than they were away, and that is just unbelievable stuff.
I mean, you talk home and road splits, but usually you only see those splits in parks like Colorado, and even that it's not that drastic. 200 right. points, 200. That cannot be coincidence.
No, absolutely not. I mean, they can try and deny it all they want, and a lot of the players have been on record denying most of the cheating. But now the gig is up at this point. Everyone knows, even no matter, like, they've lost a lot of their credibility, and that's mm-hmm. that's one of those things that you can't get back.
This is a stain that doesn't come out very easily. This is gonna stick with them for a long, long, long time. And you wonder if that's gonna affect free agency down the road. Are draft picks going to want to sign with them? Are they going to want to stick with an organization that has a reputation like they've established here for cheating?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, you look at some of the players, and some of them were, for me personally, some of my favorite players in the past couple of years. Altuve, Bregman. I mean, the pitchers don't necessarily have as much to do with it, but a lot of them still partook in the ability of, like, being able to gather some of the information that they used and took advantage of. But the pitchers, everything from that, like, I respected a lot of those guys. They worked hard. They talked pretty confidently, but not too confidently. They were guys that people could look up to. And for the city of Houston, I mean, you come out after, I believe it was that devastating hurricane that took out a lot of that city, to come out and have a World Series winner come to your city, that was massive for them. I mean, it was one of the better story, like one of the happier storylines of the past couple of years, was the city of Houston rallying behind these Astros for a World Series win. And now you have to look at that World Series with a massive asterisk next to it, which sucks for everyone involved.
That's the one where you can just say about the whole situation, it just sucks for everybody involved. I'll get you Mike Trout's comments. These were from last week, from February 17th, at least was the day of the article, up in the third line of the article on CNN. I don't agree with the punishments, or quote, I don't agree with the punishments. The players are not getting anything. It was a player-driven thing. It sucks, too, because guys' careers have been affected. A lot of people lost jobs. It was tough. Me going up to the plate knowing what was coming, it would be pretty fun up there, end
yeah,
quote.
Absolutely. I mean, I believe it was Giancarlo Stanton said, if you put me up there and let me know what pitch is coming, I probably would have hit 80 home runs last year. It wouldn't have been much of a challenge. When you put someone like that up there, and you let them know what's happening, it's all but done for the ball.
The players this good, they're already the best players in the world. You tell them what pitch is coming, whew, that's dangerous.
Yeah, it's hard to believe how good they could possibly be if they knew what pitch was coming. I couldn't imagine telling Mike Trout that, hey, a fastball is coming high.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
It would be all over for everyone. I mean, when you have Altuve, Jose Altuve, little Jose Altuve, sitting on a high and out slider from Aroldis Chapman and sending it to win a playoff game, you know something's a little bit up. How do you know a slider's coming from one of the hardest throwing guys in all of baseball? It's one of those things where you're just like, when I was watching the game, I was like, hats off to him. I mean, he hung
it up. That was a cool moment.
It was a very cool moment. Everyone was ecstatic. The Yankees had lost. The Astros had won. I'm a Yankees fan, but it was one of those things where you tip your hat to the team that beats you. And a lot of times the Yankees come one step closer every single year. But when they face the Astros, it's always a challenge because they have some of the best pitchers in the world and some of the best hitters in the world, or so we thought. It'll be interesting to see how they do this year, not knowing what's going to happen.
Yeah, and one last thing before we move on. The sad part about it is they were good enough to win the World Series with what they had. They didn't need a cheat to do any of this.
Well, I mean, Max Kellerman said it best. I mean, hypothetically, they would have been. But now you have this big, giant question mark, and he said so himself. You weren't good enough to win the World Series because you cheated. You wouldn't have made it past the Red Sox or the Yankees to get to the World Series had you not cheated, and that's what sucks. Because you look at that team and you have someone like Justin Verlander, you have people like Gerrit Cole that come in there. Justin Verlander, one of my favorite pitchers, now has an asterisk next to his World Series ring because they cheated.
It's unfortunate. You feel one of the more overlooked parts of this whole scenario is the Astros pitchers. How do they feel?
And I mean, as we're going to talk about here coming up a little bit later, Gerrit Cole is going to arguably one of their biggest rivals in the Yankees. I'm sure he's ready to come back and put the hurting on the Astros, to say the least.
All right, well, before we get to Gerrit Cole and the Yankees and a couple of the big free agent signings that went down this offseason, how good our second storyline, we went along on that Astros one, lots to talk about there. Our second storyline, how good are the Dodgers going to be with Mookie Betts? That big three-team trade, that it kind of looked like maybe it wouldn't happen for there for a second, but they got everything worked out, sent a couple more prospects. That Dodgers lineup with the young talent they have, Gavin Lux, Will Smith, Cody Bellinger, Mookie Betts, Justin Turner, the list goes on and on. Corey Seager, Max Muncy. That line, they were already good, and now you add Mookie Betts to that lineup. Whew.
Yeah, goodness, it's unbelievable how good they are right now. Adding him, it seems a little unfair at a certain point how stacked this Dodgers lineup has gotten. I mean, you go from being, I think they were the best record in the league, right? Last year, did they have 110 wins?
If they didn't have it, they were awfully close.
They were awfully close to the best record in the league last year, and then to gain arguably the best right fielder in all of baseball. It's kind of ridiculous. You go from having, I don't even remember who the right fielder was, but you're placing with Mookie Betts, and then you pick up.
I'm pretty sure Bellinger played right field for
absolutely.
Most of the time.
And
so,
I'm sure they're going to have to figure out that.
Yeah, I would assume Bellinger would be the everyday center fielder.
Yeah.
Or maybe move him to first, Muncy to second.
Yeah, that's a thing. Jock
Peterson's gone, so that clears up.
You have such a good problem with how many players you have now that are so good. Gavin Lux coming up, played fantastic last year. Dustin May, a great prospect pitcher. Your pitching didn't really take much of a hit at all whatsoever from these trades.
No.
You still have Kershaw. You still have all these consistent players.
Walker Buehler,
an absolute dog
stud
at the mound. And now what do you look forward to? Hopefully, in their situation, they are looking to win this World Series right now at this point. Because they've sacrificed a lot to get to where they're at right now.
And they still have a lot. They still have Dustin May. They still have Gavin Lux, Will Smith.
And they're not old.
And they're not, no. They still got a lot of young talent. That team is, they've already been good for the last decade. They're going to be good for the next two decades.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to look at a team better prepared for the future than the Dodgers are right now. They have talent that's young. They have talent that's a bit older. They have veterans. They have young sparks in their lineups. They have people that are right in the prime of their careers. And right now, you have to look at the Dodgers as the favorites to win the NL entirely.
At least that would that'd be the consensus. That'd be the that it's it seems like they've been that the last 5 or 6 years. They've gotten to the World Series a couple times, but haven't been able to get over the hump. It's still been what 32 years since they last. It was 88, I believe, last time they won the World Series. It's been a while, but this is their best chance in a while, I think, to get to the World Series. Another team. This is a popular World Series pick. Yankees, Dodgers. One of the guys on the Yankees, 9 years, $324 million. That hurt to say that.
Yeah.
That is a lot of money.
At this point, I couldn't actually fathom how much money that really is, and that's just in his nine-year span, not including the money that he's already made. Gerrit Cole, arguably the best pitcher in baseball, moves to the New York Yankees, one of the biggest teams in all of baseball.
In all the world.
In all the world, honestly. They're, I believe, the third or fourth most valuable franchise in all of the world, which is just crazy to think about. But you look at the moves that the Yankees have made recently, getting him. They missed out on some big-time players recently. Like, you look at Machado, you look at Harper. They wanted to get at least one of those guys, and they weren't able to do it. They probably should have pulled the trigger on Verlander. They weren't going to let another person like that go through their hands again. And, I mean, the Yankees lineup now has someone for every single day that can just consistently dominate. They have Luis Severino. They have Masahiro Tanaka. They have J.A. Happ. They now have Gerrit Cole. That's one of the scariest starting rotations that you could think of in the MLB right now.
The only question mark I can think of is, will the lineup stay healthy? They had all sorts of problems with injuries last season. They still, let me pull up their record just to be 100% sure, but they won 103 games, and they played at least half the season with at least half their lineup with backups.
Yeah, and that's the thing with their position player situation is they found out so much about the people that could fill in. Gio Urshela came in, not a guy who you would ever expect to be a big-time player and bats over 300 and almost wins a gold glove at third base. You have DJ LeMahieu playing almost every single position known to man in the infield, locking it down in the MVP candidacy. You have Aaron Judge, who was hurt almost all year. You have Giancarlo Stanton, who was hurt most of the year. Hicks coming back. All of these players are at least all-star caliber players, just sitting down, not even playing last year, and filled in for by Luke Voit. You have Ford. You have people like that. Sanchez was finally healthy last year, which helped them a lot. Gleyber Torres, one of the young stars of the league. I believe he's 22 years old? He's extraordinarily young and one of the best power-hitting middle infielders in the league. And then you look at the people that they have in the pen now. They now have, I forgot about Paxton. They have James Paxton still.
The Big Maple.
The Big Maple himself.
One of my favorite nicknames in all of sports.
They're pitching staff is unreal if you really look at it from top to bottom. You have Miguel Andujar coming off an injury, who is a Rookie of the Year candidate. Yeah, Gleyber Torres, 23 years old.
Just turned 23 in December.
It's ridiculous. The depth that they have young players, they have older players. All of their prospects that are now playing, you look at Judge, you look at Sanchez. I mean, the trade with the Cubs to get Gleyber Torres that ended up giving them back Aroldis Chapman, they now have probably one of the best teams I've seen the Yankees field in a long time.
Definitely the favorites in the AL. And one of the teams that will probably be a favorite, if not towards the top, at least in the next couple of seasons, our fourth storyline here in the last segment of the QTV Hawk Talk podcast. We're going on almost an hour of recording time here, talking some Hawks athletics and also some baseball here on the back end of things. But our fourth storyline, coming in to the MLB season as spring training gets underway, how good will the White Sox be? That lineup, it gets overlooked. I think the White Sox, if not this year, maybe the year after in 2021, will be a dangerous team in the American League.
Yeah, absolutely. They have Tim Anderson, one of the better players in all the AL, coming back. They have young talent up and down the lineup. It's Eloy Jimenez. They now have Edwin Encarnacion picked up. They have Gurriel that they just picked up. Their lineup is
deep, solid,
young. Deep. They have old guys. Like we talk about it with all these teams, old guys and young guys mixed together very well. It's very nice to see. I mean, the South Side hasn't had much to cheer for a long time, it seems. Mm-hmm. And now I think they're finally getting there. They've always been looking at who's going to be next, who's going to be the prospect that comes up. And right now they're there. Kopech coming back from an injury. He's going to be a huge help. Luis Robert, top three prospect in the league, going to be a massive help when he finally gets up to the big stage, which hopefully for them is next year. And Giolito, a Cy Young candidate for most of the season, looking to come back and bounce back within another consistent year. Their team looks ready.
That on paper, they look ready to compete, now. If not now, then next year. Indians didn't really – if Francisco Lindor leaves, the Indians, you would assume, would trade Francisco Lindor at some point. That's really going to, I think, shift the balance of power in the AL Central. And will the Twins, will they be the same as they were last year, winning over 100 games? I don't know. We'll get to our bold predictions in a second. I think one of my bold predictions involves these very White Sox. So we'll move on to our fifth and final storyline. Not really a storyline, but more just a talking point here as MLB spring training gets underway. What say you, Mr. Knox? You're a couple bold predictions for the 2020 Major League Baseball season. We're still in spring training. We're still over a month from the regular season, but what's tickling at your gut here?
For me, I think it's going to come down to, I'm sure you're going to talk about it, at least two divisions will have new winners next year. I think that's a pretty safe bet. If not the White Sox winning their division, then I think the Reds have a very good chance at winning the Central this year. One of the more dangerous start top to bottom nine players you can put out there lineup-wise, they have a lot of talent now. And I think there's plenty of teams that are ready to jump the gun. The Mets, another one of those teams right on the fringe of being able to jump over a couple teams and win their division. I think there's going to be at least two new division winners next year. And then I'd say my boldest prediction, I think the MVP is going to go to someone fresh and new. It's going to be a pitcher.
Oh. Maybe someone from your Yankees, maybe.
Maybe. But I just feel like it might be time for a pitcher. I think it can happen. Shohei Ohtani is probably one of the best chances. But it's going to be hard for him to outduel the likes of people like Yelich, Bellinger. You're going to have to look at Mike Trout every single year. But if someone can go out there, say it's Shohei Ohtani, and bat. If he bats .295, hits 25 home runs, and has a sub-4 ERA and wins a few games, way more than he loses, he could do it. You could look at someone like Garrett Cole Justin Verlander is going to be interesting to see how he pitches next year, but the likes of Scherzer, Cole, people like that, if one of them has like a one-loss year, I think you have to give it to him. I mean, last year you looked at Verlander and Cole, they should have been in the MVP conversation because without them, I don't think the Astros win 107 games.
Those guys were absolutely unhittable. Verlander was literally unhittable once this year. He's got multiple no-hitters.
Yeah, I mean, I've never seen that kind of dominant pitching in my life. And
two guys on the same team.
Yes, that's the thing. Like, you usually have the one guy who always is there. Scherzer was usually that guy for the Nationals. He now has some more help, which is nice for him. I'm going to be interested to see how the Nationals look this next year. But Cole and Verlander on the same team was almost criminal. Hey, there was every other couple days, MLB Twitter was just filled with nasty pitches from both of those players, just disgusting, unhittable stuff. You look at Jacob DeGrom. He's been a consistent Cy Young finalist. and he finally has a team that could possibly win him some more games. You look at his record, and sometimes, like the year he won almost won the Cy Young, or did he win it?
He did last year in 2018.
And
he won it back to back
games.
I think it was something like 12-10, 11-11, something like it's that. Just, let me find the actual number.
It's just not fair. You look at that, and the best pitcher, arguably in the league, gets virtually no help this year. The Mets, I hope, get him some help. I've always been a Jacob DeGrom fan, and it'll be interesting to see how he comes out. But yeah, I'm thinking a pitcher. I'm thinking a pitcher for the first time in a long time.
Think this man DeGrom might be one of those guys.
He's definitely an argument. I mean, without him, where are the Mets?
2018, Jacob DeGrom, 217 innings, 269 strikeouts, 46 walks, 1.70 ERA.
Good for 10-9.
10-9 record.
Unbelievable stuff right there. Like, you look at that.
And last year, 2.43, 11-8.
It's just crazy stuff. Like, it's almost unfair. It's just one of those things where you look at him and it's like, why does he not get more help?
He's won no more. He's pitched every year. He's pitched started at least 22 games every year since 2014. Has a 2.62 career ERA, and he's won 66 games. His ERA is 2.62.
That's first ballot, unarguable Hall of Fame ERA numbers, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the things he's doing right now, if he can keep this up for, even if he keeps this up for another 3 years, even close to that, he's
well on his way.
He's easily a first ballot Hall of Famer. It's just unbelievable stuff.
Well, my bold prediction. I've put some thought into this. So, I say two of these three teams will win a playoff series this year. The Angels, the White Sox, and the Reds. At least two of those three teams will win a playoff series this year.
I want it to be the Angels, personally. Mike Trout deserves it at this point. You can, the best player in baseball hasn't won a playoff series. Has he even won a game?
Let me find this. I think he's only played three postseason games, right, if my memory serves me correct. Let me find this. But I'm pretty sure he's only played in three postseason games. I'm pretty sure they got swept out of the DS. Was it 2015, somewhere around there?
Yeah, something like that. And it's just tough to see. I mean, he's your favorite player's favorite player for the most part, and he's been unstoppable his entire career. The only thing that stopped him is the fact that his team just hasn't had it.
And really, the thing that worries me about them is their pitching.
Oh, every single time. The Angels'
starting rotation. Dylan Bundy doesn't scare me. Andrew Heaney. I mean, they added Julio Teheran. He's probably going to be their number one. That's going to be but that lineup, the middle, that might be the scariest 2-3-4-5 lineup in the entire league. Forget the AL, the entire league. Nice. You're going to have Mike Trout, Shohei Ohtani, Anthony Rendon, and don't sleep on Justin Upton either.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Rendon going there was nice to see because he's finally getting some even more help than he already had. And Simmons even is a great player. Like, their position players seem to be fine. It's just a matter of getting them some help pitching-wise.
Trying to find... Oh, here we go. Let's find Mike Trout's... Yep. Three career postseason games.
He only has one hit in those games, which is...
It was a home run, though. It was a home run.
In fashion, of course, it's a home run. But in the fact that he's only been to the playoffs in 2014.
2014, yeah.
And it is 2020, and he's the greatest player in baseball and has been for a few years now. It's sad. But that's baseball for you. That's the beauty of it all.
That's the beauty of baseball. He's played 9 seasons, 3 career postseason games for. He's been the best player. I think I was reading something the other day, or somebody showed me something. He has finished, I believe, every full season he's played. Take away his rookie year, he only played 40 games. He has been in the top, at least the top 5. I want to say the top 5 in MVP voting every single year.
I believe that's right. I think that number is correct. And he's been top 2 in the past 4 years, isn't it? Something like that.
Well, the one year he lost out to, I believe it was 2016, to Miguel Cabrera, because he won the Triple Crown.
Right. And he lost to Altuve. Other than that, he's won the MVP essentially every single time, other than that, right?
I believe so. Let's pull up our good friend baseball reference here. That'll tell us.
And he's batting a career 305, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. That's
305.
Nothing to slouch at in the years of strikeouts and excellent pitching that we've seen since he's came into the league.
How about a career OPS of 1,000? If you're not familiar with OPS, on base plus slugging, I believe the average MLB hitter is, what, about 740, 750?
Something
above, like above that. Anything above 800 is good. Anything above, say, 850 is all-star caliber. Anything above 900, you're an MVP contender. His career OPS is exactly 1,000.
It's unreal. I mean, his WAR is already incredibly high for his few seasons as he's played. I don't even remember exactly what it was. I'll try and pull that up.
If I'm not mistaken, I think he's already accumulated more WAR than Derek Jeter did his entire career.
I'm sure that number probably is correct.
Or he's really, really close.
I'm pulling up baseball reference just as well as Shane over here is looking up what we were talking about earlier. Yeah, he has a 72.5 WAR, which is insane. That is unreal. He's only played 9 seasons. Derek Jeter had a 72.4 WAR in his entire career. One off from a unanimous Hall of Famer, and he has more WAR than him. It's insane.
That is, if that doesn't tell you how good Mike Trout is, I don't know what will.
And it makes me it hurts me to think about the fact that people really, they look at baseball and they think it's boring or things like that. The things this guy does, to me, just, it's one of the more impressive things in all of sports. He's been consistent every single year. He hits for power. He steals. He's an excellent defensive center fielder. He is an MVP candidate all the time. He is a fantastic human being for what we know.
Oh,
he
incredible.
He is always playing catch with someone on the sidelines. He's always signing baseballs. He's always relatively soft-spoken. He doesn't really talk about many controversial things. You don't see him in the news for anything. And people want him to be more of a character, and I just don't understand that. The best of people in baseball is basically enveloped in all of Mike Trout. If you were to create the perfect baseball player,
it's Mike Trout.
I can't wait to see what he does next year with more help in the form of Rendon.
And the scary part about it is he's getting better.
Right.
He's already the best player in baseball, and it's not even really close. And he's getting better.
Yeah. I don't really know where he can go with it. I think it's just a matter of consistency at this point. It's so hard to improve on what he's already done. Like, honestly, I mean, what do we want from him? 50-50 year? I mean, maybe.
He had 45 and 11. His stolen bases are down a little bit, but that's just going to come with aging. I mean, aging. He's only 27 years old. Yeah. Broke in the league at 19 years old. He's only 27, and he's already been the best player in the league for 7-8 years. And he's still in his 20s.
Yeah, he is. He's a Jordan, LeBron, Kobe Bryant-esque player that just comes in and immediately just starts dominating.
So before we start rambling on too long, we're getting really long. We're up over an hour, about an hour and 10 minutes of recording time right now. But to back up what we said earlier about Trout and the MVP voting, every year except his rookie year, he's finished in the top four every single year. And he only finished fourth one time. Every other year, he's finished in the top two in MVP voting. And he's won it three times.
It's insane to me. There's no other words but insane. And a lot of those other MVPs that he hasn't won probably could have gone to him, if we're going to be honest.
Even the year Cabrera won the Triple Crown,
it was close.
He easily could have won it.
It was just so hard to argue with that Triple Crown. I remember that year because Mike Trout was unbelievable. That was some of his best defensive highlights as well as his offense. And Cabrera hitting the Triple Crown just kind of, I think, sealed it for him right there. That was an unbelievable achievement.
All right, so Hunter Knox's bold prediction, at least two division winners will be different this season. The last few years, it's been pretty consistent at the top of a lot of these divisions, a lot of the same division winners. So that's kind of a bold prediction. Two out of three, the Angels, White Sox, and Reds will win a playoff series this year. Two out of those three. So we'll leave it at that. For Hunter Knox, I'm Shane Holsey. This has been the first episode of the QUTV Hawk Talk podcast. Thank you for listening. Have a great day, everybody.